On this episode of the Edible Valley, we're talking cooking methods from moist heat to dry heat and everything in between. Well, Darren, back again. Another day in the studio, and today we're going to go on to some more cooking terms.
Yep.
Get into some more, giving some more advice to people on who want to get in the kitchen and learn to cook for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought something we should mention too is just where we're going with this. You and I have sort of talked about it a bit, but we haven't actually committed it to the show here. Just what are we doing? We're kind of reviewing these books while you're pursuing your next level of culinary achievement skill.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I'd like to go over. I would like to get my chef de cuisine.
Right.
Which is probably a lot more in depth than what we're going to cover.
Right.
But at least it just brings back some of the stuff and lets me remember.
Right.
Some of my basics that I seem to forget sometimes. So.
Right. Essentially, we're just... We're going through your crib notes and study notes on your next level here.
Yeah, and I think it's a great way for people, if they're interested, just to learn some cooking terms and learn some of the art form of cooking. And there's some great advice out there.
I wholeheartedly agree. I love it when we shed light on, and I love it when people shed light on things for me so that I better understand everything that I'm doing in a kitchen. So shall we get into it?
So today we're going to talk a little bit about heat and what its effect on food, as well as some different cooking methods.
Right.
So I guess we should start by getting into sort of the what we're working with here.
Right.
And when we're talking with the effect of heat on foods, I guess we're going to start off talking about proteins. And most of our proteins, we're kind of looking at your meats, right? So your fish, your poultry, your beef, your eggs, your milk, all those kind of items, as well as we're looking at nuts and beans and grains, right? So those are kind of your major components of proteins. Now, when heat's added to that, we have a nice little effect that takes place, which is...
Coagulation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That word always stumps me. It doesn't stump me. I just can't pronounce it.
Right? Yeah.
So with that, that kind of is the firming up of the meat. And so it sort of pulls together and gives it that more stable feeling to it. As you know, when you cook a steak, when it's rare, it's nice and soft. Whereas you get to well done, you get that much stiffer, stiffer feeling. And that's more on your tender things. The other thing you have to work with is connective tissue.
Right.
Definitely in meats, which is part of your proteins. Now that's if you want to go past that well done stage, is you can melt it as you cook it, right?
Right, which we'll probably talk about in a few minutes in the various cooking methods, but yes.
And another great thing is acids too, which, you know, are a great thing with proteins because they can cut them down and break them up a little bit. Yeah.
Right, I mean, yeah, I can't imagine some of those. I mean, just last night I did some pork shoulder cubes and did them on the barbecue. And I can't imagine not giving it marinade that had a high vinegar component to help break that down.
Well, that helps dissolve that connective tissue.
Right.
Soften it.
Right.
Very nice. It also does speed up the cooking process a little bit.
Absolutely.
That acid will cook.
Right. Absolutely. Up. Yeah.
So when you're looking at dealing with like a ceviche, which you're basically cooking your fish or your item in an acid.
Right.
Right. Another component of food that we all have to deal with is carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got your starches and your sugars, you know, simple, some complex carbohydrates. It's definitely something that we all look at maybe cutting a little less out of our diets.
Yeah, it's definitely become the go or the sort of the way people are moving towards eating less carbs, more vegetables and fruits. But
now we should look at sort of their effect on it as with caramelization. Sugar is a beautiful one. It's just getting those beautiful colors out of it. Whether you're looking at baking bread or whether you're looking at searing off a steak, it's just getting that rich caramelized sugar flavor out of it.
Yeah.
It's also a thickener, right?
Right.
With the gelatinization.
Right.
So you can, you know, when you're thickening up a sauce, using that carbohydrate to swell and absorb some of the moisture, give you that nice thick consistency.
Yeah, I was actually it's funny. My kids are 7 and 6, and I hadn't really realized this until I just looked at what we're talking about. But these are two things that I've been really hammering home with the kids too lately: is caramelization and I would never have given it the term gelatinization, but my 7-year-old, she's making basic roux with me right now, and she's getting the hang of it. And then my son, he's trying to figure out how things, as we cook them, they become sweeter. And yeah, just both two topical things that we've been talking about in the house this week.
But, right.
Yeah.
That's cool. What's the other, the big one is fats.
Right. Yeah.
And with all your meats and that, they all have fats in it. And I think fat is something that we shouldn't be as afraid of.
Right. It's getting
It's got a bad rap.
Yeah.
Over the years.
And fats are so important to what you're cooking.
Yeah, it's just having that right smoke point on your oil or being able to sear something properly, as well as just releasing the natural fats within a protein.
Absolutely.
They can add extra flavor. I mean, just taking butter, for instance, and browning it, and it gets that nice almond flavor. It's just it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It is. It is. And I think that's the reason why it gets a bad rap is so many fats provide so many great flavors that over time, we've focused too much on too much of the fats. And truth is, I mean, we just have to reduce the amount. We don't have to eliminate them. Just maybe not go excessive with your fats, right? As far as a healthy standpoint. But I mean, half these foods and half the cooking methods aren't attainable without a minimum amount of fat. You need it.
Yeah. We're not talking about deep frying everything.
No.
We're just talking
no.
a nice layer of oil.
Yeah.
And so, and another thing that we have to just take a look at with heat and food is vitamins and minerals, pigments and flavoring. Just because, you know, vitamins get destroyed. They break down in heat.
Absolutely.
And that's why a lot of vegetables, it's nice to steam them quickly or, you know, to keep some of those natural vitamins still within it.
Right.
Keep healthy, fresh food, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's just it. Like in any cooking method, you're adjusting those things. You're adjusting the minerals, the vitamins, the pigments, and the flavor components. Those ingredients aren't going to taste the same no matter what. No matter what your cooking method is, something is getting adjusted in there. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, some of these things you want to adjust. You want to adjust the coloring. You want to adjust the flavoring. That's part of the reason of cooking everything. But being aware of what you're doing and how it's going to adjust it. That's the key. And I think that's where we're moving to in a few minutes here.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can get into sort of the cooking methods. You've got really two methods that you can work with. And there's different ways of getting those things. And we should just look at straight off moist heat.
Right.
Versus dry heat.
Dry heat.
Difference is moist uses a liquid.
Right.
Uses water. Dry uses convection or conduction,
right?
Dry sources of heat,
right? Although a little counterintuitive there. Generally, when we use a little bit of fat or what have you, that is still considered a dry heat. I would have thought it would be a moist heat, but yeah, as we go into it, you'll see.
Well, and that's basically because you're playing with the moisture within the meat itself,
right? You're not adding any moisture to it.
You're not, yeah. Fat does not.
Right.
Add moisture to it. Whereas when you're doing a moist heat cooking, you're adding moisture to it to
right.
sort of add that,
yeah.
moisten up what's already there, you know, to bring out the moistures within the proteins
and
give something for the carbohydrates to climb onto. So I guess we should really start off with moist heat.
Sure.
And let's start off because moist heat, let's talk breakfast and poaching.
Mm-hmm. Poaching.
Everybody loves poached eggs. Okay, maybe not everyone, but I'm a big fan.
I love poached eggs ever since I was a little kid. That's easily been my favorite way to have my eggs. And I like my eggs. So, but yeah, poaching. Poaching is generally, it's the low end of the sort of the water scale. It's the sort of the least obtrusive cooking method with water. It's a nice, light, I'm reluctant to even call it a boil. You want it to barely be bubbling.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you want to keep that temperature down. I mean, you still want to have it about, you know, you don't want to have that raging boil.
No.
So we should break this down into basically boiling water. It comes
right.
in three stages for you. You've got poaching water, which is
right.
that nice, gentle simmer. Well, sorry. Rolling boil, not yes. boil, right? Sorry,
yeah, no, the terminology is hard.
It's hard to describe water without using the three. So simmering, which is that gentle bubble
right.
on the water. And then boiling, is which...
your raging bubbles.
Raging thing. And really, there's not a lot of stuff you want to be cooking in boiling yeah. water.
You know, I don't know if we talked about this the other day or if this was in conversation with you and I, but it was only about a year and a half ago that I realized there is nothing that I make that needs to be boiled. As a young person getting into food, I probably boiled the heck out of everything. Pastas, not so much veggies, but you know, even then, even when I was steaming them, I was getting into a raging boil. And,
mm-hmm.
and just all these little mistakes. Almost nothing needs to be boiled. Almost everything I make, I do either a poach or a simmer.
I'm going to tell you the one thing that you should, I am always a boil on, and mm-hmm. that's pasta.
Yeah.
Or any pasta style of cooking.
Yeah.
Which is bringing your water to a boil.
Right.
Seasoning it and then putting your pasta in it. And the only reason you want it at a good boil is so the pasta doesn't stick
together. So it doesn't stick. Right.
And whether you're cooking rice that way.
Right.
Or a grain of some sort, a right. lentil, you just want that boil just so they don't stick together. And that's pretty much boiling.
That's, yeah.
For me, that's it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Whereas fair when enough. You get into simmering, you know, mm-hmm. that's where you want to take your soups to. You
yeah.
know, bring it up to a nice simmer. You know what? You've brought it above a temperature that it's safe.
Right.
And then poaching. I mean, poaching is, I like it low and slow and
yeah.
cool. I mean, one of the neatest things I've done is almost a sous vide mm-hmm. style of cooking is I did this with Aaron at Avenue. We just poached eggs and I forget the temperature. I think it was around 70 degrees, 74 oh, wow. degrees. And we poached them for a half an hour.
Wow.
And then when we pulled the eggs out and cracked them open, that sort of white membrane around yeah. them sort of dissolved away and we just had the beautiful poached egg, but it was perfectly poached all the way through.
Oh, wow.
So it was still moist.
Right.
Like it still sort of ran, but
yeah.
it had
coagulated.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A little bit. And so you could, it was just like that nice ooze. So that's wow. sort of bringing that temperature down and that's yeah. what you can do with poaching.
Right.
And that goes the same thing with fish. Or meats that are you're cooking, right?
Right.
So you can actually, you're poaching the fish. The higher you have the temperature on that protein, mm-hmm. the more it's going to shrink and it's going to firm up.
Right.
So the longer you can drag that out and we can dissolve some of the connective tissue.
Right.
The more tender of a product you're going to
get. Right. And it probably should be mentioned too that a poaching doesn't necessarily have to be in water. There's some other things that we can do. Well, I shouldn't say it shouldn't be in just straight water. You can add other ingredients or other flavors or what have you.
Or stocks.
Or yeah. To in your. But yeah, we shouldn't get into seasonings and flavorings because that's next week.
Next week.
We'll get into that next week. All right. So let's get back to the moist heat methods. I guess up next is steaming.
Well, actually, I want to just jump way back. We'll say blanching. Sure. How about that?
Sure, yeah.
There's a great one.
A little bit further, okay.
Because you know what? That comes off your nice simmered
right.
vegetables. And blanching is just cooking something to a point where it's ready to go.
Right.
So I'm blanching vegetables. We do it at work all the time.
Ever since I first started working in restaurants, I have to blanch my vegetables now. Just that
it is.
And you just got to do it.
You fire it into some hot water or some boiling, simmering water.
Simmering water.
Get the correct. That's well seasoned. You strain it off, and we always hit it right into ice water.
Right.
Or really cold, and that kind of shocks all those vitamins and
right.
secures them back.
Absolutely.
Inside.
You take broccoli that's been, unfortunately, let's say boiled or simmered, and you leave it on the counter for 5 minutes after, and compare that to that same broccoli that you've thrown into an ice bath right after. I mean, you get that. You still have the nice texture. You still have that great color. You still got the great flavor. Yeah, that ice bath really is, it goes hand in hand.
It just shocks it. It stops the cooking process.
Yeah.
And then you can reheat it quick and serve it.
Yeah.
So if you're doing a dinner party, blanch off your vegetables, have them all nice and beautifully green or
yeah.
bright, brilliant colors. And then as the people come in and you want to serve it, you just fire it in a pan.
Yeah.
Give it a quick saute, season it or flavorings that you want and boom.
We just broke radio here. The big secret every single restaurant uses is, yes, they all do par cooking and in blanching. It's one of the only ways to get all that food out of the restaurant in a busy period.
Yeah.
it has to be done.
One of the tricks.
One of the big tricks that I remember shocking my mom. Just she had no idea. But yeah.
Now we can go on to steaming, because I think steaming is a great way. It definitely, it's a fast way. It's actually, I believe, not as fast as boiling,
mm-hmm.
but you keep more of the vitamins and the nutrition in the vegetable because it's not leaching out as much into your stock or your broth that you're getting from poaching or boiling.
Yeah, absolutely. I have nothing to add on steaming. I think it's straightforward. I think it's one of those terms that most people are going to be familiar with.
Yeah. I mean, just having a nice pot, not having your actual food within the liquid.
Right.
There is also, you know, the old classic empapillat.
Right.
Which is wrapping a fish in its own, or wrapping anything really in parchment. And that's actually steaming within its own juices. So you're sealing something. I've done it.
Yeah. I love empapillat. I mean, it's, you can get some great flavors there. You just throw all of your, exactly as you said, I take my parchment paper. I know that you can use tin foil, but parchment paper and everything cooks together and you get these great shared flavors. That's essentially steaming inside your oven rather than steaming something on your range top.
Right.
Yeah.
There's also pressure steaming, which I don't think anyone does at home.
I've never pressure steamed a thing in my life.
I've only used a pressure steamer once in my life. And
to
me, it's fast.
Right.
It's great for getting large volumes of things steamed and ready to go. But
This isn't something that you're going to see in most households.
No, it's something you're going to find in an industrial kitchen.
And right.
It increases that boiling point of water. So it increases that heat. So it's faster and quicker.
Right.
Mind you, that's also if you're thinking about boiling,
mm-hmm.
putting proteins in that,
it's going
to toughen them up really quick.
So. Right, absolutely.
Now we should get on to my favorite style of
moist. I was just going to say, this is my favorite of the moist methods for sure. This is where flavor lives.
Exactly. Braising.
Yes.
Braising is an art form that I think many people have, over the last few years, are getting back into, but had kind of forgotten.
Absolutely. I mean, for years, I can remember, more to the point, I remember when it came back in style, when people in the food industry started to come back towards braising, and I realized that how long it had gone, where really there wasn't that much focus on it, and it's rightly back in the limelight.
It's something my grandmother did.
Yeah, yeah, you know, same here.
It was kind of lost, and it got to that. It was a point that we had, everyone went after expensive cuts of meats.
Right.
And that's what I think the real change in the whole industry is, those expensive cuts of meats got really expensive.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful cuts, but you can get just as much flavor, if not a nicer texture and flavor, out of a lower quality grade of meat just by cooking it properly and spending that extra effort on it.
And this is one of those things. Braising, I think, is one of those keys that once you get the concept, once you sort of grapple with it and I'm reluctant to say master it, once you get braising, that sort of kicks you up. You've elevated into your cooking status or your chef status or what have you. Even if it's amongst your circle of friends, it's really easy to blow people away with some simple braising. And now, so we should probably go into...
Well, braising is actually a combination cooking.
Right.
Because it starts off with your dry heat.
Yes.
Because you want to sear off. You want to get those caramelization from your sugars. And you want to brown your meats. You want to get that extra flavor going in there.
Right.
So that's sort of your key basic of braising, is getting that initial sear.
Right.
And then, you know, once you get that going, then it's adding your liquid to that.
Right.
So then this is going from doing meats, we could say even doing cabbage. I love doing braised cabbage.
Right.
One of my first jobs in the restaurant is making
purple
braised cabbage. And that was like sauteing your onions and getting that nice rich flavor out of that. And we used to do like 16 liters of onions.
Wow.
You know, and we just reduce that down, and then we'd add a little bit of sugar and a little bit of vinegar, and then we'd fire on all this cabbage and cook that down.
Nice.
And then that whole braising, slow simmering of the cabbage and that flavor, and it just came through. But then you get on to doing some nice braised meats, and that's
absolutely
a trick, right?
Okay, so braising is essentially You're browning your meat, and once the meat's browned, introducing your liquid and your other flavors, and letting it cook for a long period of time. In the oven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically cooking, and you don't want to totally cover it.
Right.
You want to have a little bit of air. So, you know, it's about 2/3 liquid to whatever product you're cooking.
Right.
You can also do, you know, certain things you can braise with chicken, like chicken or fish, which mm-hmm. you're braising. You may not add as much liquid, but it's right. steaming in its own juices.
Right.
So that's a little bit of the process.
Right.
So now that we've got sort of moist heat out of the way, we should get on to dry heat cooking methods.
Yeah.
This is the fun stuff. This is where we start getting into roasting and baking.
Right.
And this is...
Roasting's obviously my favorite. I'm pretty good at baking, but roasting is my favorite of the dry heat methods. But I've cut you off. Go on.
No, I think that's it. Like roasting, I mean, it's getting that nice oven at mm-hmm. a nice good temperature and cooking mm-hmm. it for a nice long length of time. And whether you're doing something... You know, you're using the heat of the air within mm-hmm. within the object to cook the item. You're not using moisture in any way. So,
right.
You know, it's the heat that's radiating from your element in your oven, which is cooking your product.
Right.
So a lot of roasting is a lot of longer cooking time. So yes, you're looking for a meat that's maybe got a little bit more connective tissue.
Right.
Something that's not as tender.
Yeah, and in that same vein, I mean, barbecuing is essentially a form of roasting, although it's not in that contained sort of environment like an oven. It's still the same effect. You're using that ambient warm heat, not the direct fire, mm-hmm. but you're using that to roast.
Yeah, and you're getting that extra. You're using. Well, let's get on to doing pan searing,
mm-hmm.
griddle work.
Mm-hmm.
And grills, right?
Because right.
that's what barbecues are. Is barbecues are a mix between a grill and an oven.
Right.
Because you have the grill, so you can get that flame up. You can get that searing off. You can get that really hot, hot heat to sear everything in and mm-hmm. seal the juices in. And yet you've got the ability to close it down.
Right.
And keep that air circulation.
Right, get that convection going.
The convection going.
Yeah.
So that the heat's constantly rotating around your product or your dinner.
Right.
And so you're getting that beautiful golden colors. The caramelization is coming in.
There's that caramelization again. Roasting is such a great method for creating caramelization, I've always found. That's where I think, that's where my kids started to question it. What's going on?
And griddle work is pretty mm-hmm. much, that's flat top. That's
yes, right.
It's a big... That's where pancakes come from.
Yeah. It is.
Let's break that down. A little bit of oil. So it's also like, you know, pan searing.
Right.
That's where we're breaking into the next thing. So you've got these different sort of styles of cooking. And, you know, the old griddle work is that, you know, frying up the bacon in the morning and the old electric griddle, which I know as a kid was one of my jobs, to be the guy throwing the bacon on the grill and flipping it.
My first kitchen job, every single morning at 8 a.m., I had to fill that griddle full of bacon and get it going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great job. So, mm-hmm. you know, and that's part of having that nice temperature. And most of your griddles are probably running around a 350 degree temperature. So they're nice and warm, you know, so they're not too hot that it burns black as soon as you get it there. You know, there's a little bit of art of turning down that temperature a bit and controlling it.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, since we're talking about this, is broiling.
Right.
Which I think is something that scares a lot of people. A lot of people don't realize they have that option on their oven.
Yeah, and those that don't, all it means is heat from above. I mean, in the most basic terms, it's just you're heating it from above.
You're radiating heat from above. And
right.
So it's a high, high, hot heat.
Right.
That's why when you put that broiler on your oven, you're cranking it up to full temperature, 500 degrees, and it's just, you're putting it under there, and it's just going to, that heat from above is just forcing itself into the meat and searing it.
Right.
Through radiation. I don't know if radiation is, it's the correct term.
It is. Negative connotation to the word, but that's the proper term for it.
So yeah, and it's a great way to brown up something and just get that nice color. If you want to melt cheese on top of something, the old au gratin style.
That's a standard. Broilers are definitely have become de facto cheese melters.
Yes. I mean, that's the only way I feel to make tuna melts.
Right.
Okay, so let's get into some more dry heat and dry heat using fats. Because we kind of talked about everything that is using just air.
Right.
And the radiation or the heat radiating or convecting from surrounding it. So let's get into, this is really pan work all of a sudden. We're talking about sautéing.
Right.
Now, I don't know if most people know that sautéing just means to jump.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So it's a little splash in the pan with oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to keep whatever you're sautéing jumping around in your pan.
Right.
So it never gets a chance to brown on one side. So it's got that complete rotation of everything. That's why you see chefs in the kitchen always shaking their pan all the time because they're sautéing. And
absolutely, yeah. Sautéing and that pan movement go hand in hand. Those two sort of need to be, or as part of defining sautéing, that's definitely what separates itself from other pan methods.
Yeah, so you get that nice golden, and the trick is to get that golden brown caramelization around everything. And get
right.
That, pull those flavors out of everything. And now it's usually you want to do it in a high heat and quick. So it's something that's like do and serve.
Right.
Whereas then we jump into something else. Now we go to pan frying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pan frying is something a lot of people make the mistake of trying to saute instead of pan frying.
Okay.
Pan frying, you should turn your temperature down a little bit.
Right.
You know, you don't need to have that hot, hot heat, you know?
Right. Exactly.
But the oil that it's searing in and use a little bit more oil.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be scared. I like to throw a touch of butter. I'll use a little, higher smoke point oil.
A little
butter in there.
Yeah.
And that just sort of brings out some of those extra browning flavors, you know, get that little almond flavor in there. So that's a great way of just pan searing. So if you're doing my favorite is schnitzels, you know, a nice breaded product.
Right.
Just throw it right in there and just do that nice slow heat. Whether you're searing off a chicken breast, I mean, that's a great way is that. Skin on the chicken breast, skin down,
right,
and just render some of that fat out,
right, and you get that. I mean, yeah, you get that great color, that great texture, that great crispiness.
I mean, I always think about duck when I'm when I'm doing it too, is rendering out the flavor, right? Like you get a nice thick duck breast, which always has that loads of fat on the outside,
right?
Well, if you can crisp up that fat a bit, and so you got to go really low and slow.
Right.
And just sear it in the pan there, get that nice color building on it, and then flip it to finish it. But, you know, take your time.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy yourself, right?
I think that's the other thing, too. I mean, it doesn't really cover it in here that we're talking about, but that was my biggest mistake is back and forth in my early days. I would move a piece of meat that I was pan frying or pan searing or whatever just over and over and over and over again. And, yeah, I finally realized that it's almost impossible to tell the doneness, especially with the poultry or something bone in. But doing it that way where you just let it cook and cook and cook on one side. And then when you start to recognize that you can flip it and it's only going to need a couple minutes and you don't need to do all that guesswork and possibly have raw product in the middle.
Yes, exactly. That's one of the tricks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've got a good grasp on pan searing. We should get on to deep frying.
Okay.
Which, I mean, a lot of people is the devil.
Yeah. Honestly, I do very, very, very little deep frying. I think there's only two things that the kids can convince me to deep fry every once in a while. But other than that, I'm not big on deep frying. But I still definitely recognize it as being a very valid way of cooking. It gets a bad rap, but it can be definitely used for good. There's some good flavors that can come out.
You can do some really great things
with
it. I just like crisping up. I mean, who doesn't like potato chips?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you fry up your own potato chips, whether they're yam, you know, you can really go anywhere. I mean, kale is great. Kale chips fried up in the fryer.
I had
great.
A friend introduce me to kale chips just a couple weeks ago. I had always avoided them. I had just assumed that they were going to taste like crispy lettuce. And I was totally wrong. Those are fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there definitely is. And you know what? French fries are awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I know they're quintessential North American food. You can't get away from them. I mean, you really can't. They're everywhere. It's part of our food history. It's
a comfort food.
It is.
And I'm not gonna. I don't think you should eat them every day.
No, but you shouldn't. I mean, that's just like any other comfort food, right? You shouldn't have fried chicken or turkey and gravy or all these other great macaroni and cheese. You know, all the comfort foods. They're for every once in a while. You know, as long as you're not eating deep fried foods every day.
That's it.
Yeah.
Excellent. I think we've kind of hit most of the big terms in cooking.
Sure.
I think we've got, you know, I guess just to recap, we're talking about moist heat, dry heat.
Right.
So in the moist heat, we're talking about poaching, simmering, and boiling.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the key ones there.
Right.
And from that, we've got braising and blanching. So
right.
Definitely things, if you're in your kitchen, jump in there and give them a try.
Absolutely.
We'll definitely have to go on to some other items that you can use these, but once you sort of understand what they are, it makes it a lot easier. As in for dry heating, did I talk about braising yet?
No, we didn't, but braising.
Flash back to braising. Still love it.
Yes.
I love braised beef.
I absolutely. If I can impart on anybody things that may seem a little daunting that you really need to get under your belt to really explore flavors, braising and roasting. And I mean, of course, roasting's in our dry heat, braising's in our moist heat. But again, touching on just sort of recapping our dry heats, we have our frying, our pan frying, our sauteing, and deep frying,
roasting,
grilling,
baking. And it's all out there. So I think next week we're going to sit down and talk a little bit about seasonings.
Yes.
Now we know how to put these meats together. We'll decide to.
How to season, how to flavor, how to, where to use the right herbs, when to use the right herbs, when to use salt. And it's not where you think it is. I'm warning you right now.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. We gratefully accept donations to help with the operating costs of the podcast or local ingredients to create new dishes in the Edible Valley Test Kitchen. Check out our website, ediblevalley.com. Like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your comments or guests you would like to hear on the show. Don't hesitate to send along your cooking questions for John to answer on the show or to pick our brain on other local food information. Edible Valley at gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.